Okay, I think we'll get started. This is week 9, and you blink your eyes, and the whole quarter is gone already. So, you know, next week is the last week, and this is the last lecture. Next week after class, we're going to have that barbecue, and I'd like to get a show of hands now on who would be attending. From this side. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Okay. It's okay to invite others, but as a part of the class, we're going to be reviewing the student presentation. So everybody that's here will be involved in that. Okay. And I'll be handing out a form next week for class evaluation, which will be filled out not only by students, but anybody who's attended the course. And the idea there is just to get feedback on how well the course has gone this year for you and get some ideas for improvements. Okay. And so we'll have our 3 presentations next week, and it should be a very nice event. This would be the order of the presentations next week. We have 3 student teams, and I'm sure we'll all be looking forward to seeing what they've come up with this quarter. Any questions at all? I'll be sending out tomorrow invitations and also some presentation tips for the students. So watch your mailbox for that. Okay. Today's speaker is Debbie Kenny, and she's been an occupational therapist at the VA Palo Alto Healthcare System for 17 years, working both at the clinic and in the Rehab R&D Center, where she was my colleague, and collaborated on numerous design and research projects with engineers and graduate students. Her work included testing and integrating technology into the rehabilitation setting in the areas of Parkinson's disease, stroke, spinal cord injury, hand therapy, and balance as related to aging. Debbie currently splits her time between her clinical work with post-stroke survivors at REACH and a lot less at the R&D Center. She's also a frequent guest lecturer with the Multiple Sclerosis Society of Santa Clara, and she's a former Deadhead. and her talk today is the transdisciplinary team bridging the gap between consumers and products in the rehab medicine. Okay, let me switch over to that slide. So,
that picture is like about 10 million.
Okay, let's welcome Debbie. Laser pointer? Yeah, down is good.
Okay, down is good.
And
okay, I would encourage all of you in the back actually to come up forward because I have things for you to see, things for you to touch, a little bit of interactive stuff. So if you're way back there in the back row, you're not going to see it too well. So don't be shy. Come on up. Feel free to look at what's on the table, as long as you're listening with half of an ear. And today I'm going to do half lecture, and half I had a couple of my students from REACH program Will Kavanaugh and Alan Knapp come to talk to us about their use of adaptive technology and what works for them, what doesn't work for them, why it does or doesn't, what kind of technology they've been able to get or haven't been able to get. And what I want to instill in you today is that designing a project and designing a product is just one step in being able to get the product to the end user, in this case somebody who's has a different ability and who needs some help to be able to live their life. And that's an involved process. That just doesn't happen. You just don't go into the doctor's office and the doctor says, oh yeah, you need X, Y, and Z, and you get X, Y, and Z, and life's good. Okay. So I'm a member of a larger team. I'm an occupational therapist. That differs a lot from a physical therapist. Anybody know anything about occupational therapy or have heard the term before? Okay, that's pretty typical. Most people have heard about physical therapy, and occupational therapy takes a little bit different view of how we look at a person. So what our goal is to do is to assist people who aren't able to function independently or who are not functioning as independently as possible in areas of daily living, workplace, self-care. And that could be because they've had an injury, or that could be because they have a disease. And so our goal is to increase their independence through functional activities and to treat them as a whole person. We don't just look at, say, this is a person who's had a, you know, stroke and therefore I can do X, Y, and Z. People vary because of the different environments that they live in, and you have to take that into account. This is a good view of what I mean by the team that I work with. So I work with a lot of different people when I'm working with rehabilitation patients. I'm working with audiologists. I'm working with nurse practitioners. I'm working with nurses. I'm working with doctors. Sometimes I'm working with rehab engineers and social workers and speech and language pathologists. We all have a part to play in how we evaluate that person and what kind of equipment that person gets. So what do we expect that when we give assistive technology to one of our patients in a rehab setting that it will do? Well, we expect that when we have somebody in a rehab situation that the ultimate goal is for them to not be in the hospital anymore, right? We want them to discharge to home. And we want them to return to all the areas of independent living that they did prior to their getting hurt or having disease process affect their ability to function. So we're talking about a lot of different areas. One, we can talk about mobility. Can they get around in their environment? Can they drive their car if they need to drive their car? If they can't drive their car, how are they going to get around? Can they get around in their house? How are they going to be able to take care of themselves? Are they going to be able to do their laundry? Are they going to be able to do their shopping? Are they going to be able to pay their bills? Are they going to be able to brush their teeth? Are they going to be able to feed themselves or make their food? Communication, a big one. Alan can probably attest well to that. Alan has what we call aphasia. He has an inability to express himself verbally well, but it doesn't mean that he doesn't understand what's going on. And so that's a big area that he needs to be able to communicate his needs and his wants. And so we need to find out ways that we can help him to do that. And of course, there's leisure skill. If all you do is work and self-care and you have no time for leisure, you're a very unbalanced individual. Some of you may be feeling that way right now in school, that you don't have as much time as you want for leisure, but it's important to everybody. And vocation. Some people really do want to be able to return to work. At the R&D Center, we have one individual, Dean Denning, who was a California Highway Patrol man, yeah. And he was involved in an accident that made him quadriplegic. And he came to us through the Spinal Cord Injury Center, and he wanted the ability to be able to work. And we wanted him to work in our center, and we had a trial program of using different technologies to allow that to happen. And we created a set of tools for him that allowed him to help with filing and with stapling things and folding letters and doing that kind of stuff at our center. So Assistive technology can be defined in a lot of different ways, from very, very simple devices to devices that require a high degree of training and user ability to be able to make them work. An example of low technology would be fingerspelling or knocking on a door. It doesn't require that you have to do a lot of training. It's pretty self-evident. It's out there. Other examples of that would be Velcro, something that's become a part of every day in the community, and things like this, where you have a built-up pen. This is just something that I got just, you know, out of the store, but it can help people who have problems with grip. They can't grip a small pencil. They have these out there. So this is an idea of a low-tech device. Here's my little finger spelling. Elementary technology devices include most battery-operated devices, but aren't limited to them. For an example, a wheelchair is an example of an elementary technology device. When we give a wheelchair to somebody, we don't assume that they will necessarily be able to use it right away. If all they have is an orthopedic injury, that may be one thing. But if you've had a neurological injury, you may require some training on how to use that wheelchair. And if you're modifying things in the house, it's another example, kind of a next step up. You can't just pull it off the shelf. It's something that needs to be bought. And there's modified eating utensils. How are you going to get the food to your mouth if you can't grab the fork? Pretty simple. We use what we call a U-cuff. Let's see, I have one here. There's two different kinds. There's one where you can slide tools into the cuff. And there's a little pocket in here, so you could slide any kind of tool in. There you don't need to hold on to it, and then you can use it. Or you have something that's a more fixed device, such as this device. But again, it requires some training. You're not just going to use it. You don't have fingers. You're not just going to go and use it and be successful with it the first time you use it. If you don't use some training involved in doing this, the sense of success is going to be diminished, and then people end up not using the device. And then we have our high-tech devices, such as our electric wheelchairs, our electric lifts, voice-operated ECUs, van controls. Scooters would be another example of that. And then, let's see. Here I'm taking a single idea. So we look at the mechanics of being able to write, something that you all pretty much take for granted that you can do in this class. And so you start with your pen or your pencil, and that works okay for you. But what if something happens to you? Maybe you need to, like my son, who has some autistic spectrum problems, need to adapt the grip so that he can hold it. So maybe you use something like this, you know, device. Something really pretty simple.
Maybe we can pass some of those things
Yeah, we can pass them around, or they can come look at them after class. Which do you think better? Okay. So. All right. And again, for him also, really chunky pens work for him. They're easier for him to hold. Fine motor problems, a difficult thing for him, so that works really well. We could adapt how the paper is. We can put it on a slant board. You can use a typewriter. You can use a computer. Now, he has trouble using the computer, so we have to kind of go to the next level of technology with him when he does use the computer for doing his reports. He's in fourth grade right now. He's having to do some pretty large reports. And so we're using drag and dictate as a way to kind of bridge that gap. So that's a high level of technology. It required some training. He had it. Not only train the system, but I had to train them in how to use it, what commands to use. Okay? So, and we have all kinds of adaptive tools just for writing alone. This tool here is a tool that's used for people who have a lot of tremor. It's heavy, it's weighted, it tends to reduce tremor in them. This is for somebody who maybe can't grip it really well. So then they hold it like this. The pen fits through the top. It's called a writing dove. And they write like this. They don't have to lift the pencil. They don't have to hold the pencil. It allows them to do that. Okay. So we'll pass them all around. This is something that Alan introduced me to. This is you can buy this out in some of the stores. It's kind of fun. They have pencil version of this, and they tried that with my son, and it didn't work, but this is a pen version. So, again, if you had arthritis, this would be a great tool because you put your finger through it. You don't have to grip it again, so it's pretty easy that way. The problem is when you get involved in giving the wrong technology to the person. So Alan would be a good example, right, Alan? Yeah, they gave that to Alan, and it didn't function for him at all. It was a good idea, but it wasn't really well thought through on that. So that's an example of kind of a continuum of how you adapt technology. Now, for most individual users, being able to use that equipment that's very inexpensive is going to be the key, because even though my son has an IEP in school, the school does not provide him with the technology. I have bought Drag and Dictate myself. Nobody bought Drag and Dictate for him. So when you're looking at equipment suitability, you need to look at a bunch of different factors. You need to look at the age of the person who is the intended users. We find that people over 65 tend to have somewhat of an aversion to using computerized systems and learning computerized systems. It's not a hard and fact truth, but there's more acceptance, of course, with the younger population. Gender plays specific roles. There's certain things that women will accept that men won't accept. And there's problems that you give certain adaptive equipment to women, and if those women are isolated out in rural communities, they tend not to use them. So you have to be very careful on how you do that. What is your perception of self? Do you see yourself as being disabled or being differently abled? That plays a big role in how well you can accept assistive technology. What culture do you come from? I know in the Filipino culture, Candy, that a lot of the elders expect to be taken care of very well. And so when we come in and say, well, Mr. X can't dress himself, and he needs to be able to dress himself to go home, that may be our goal, but in fact, in reality, the goal is that the family will dress him. So you have to look at that also when you're giving equipment. What kind of support do they have from the family? What kind of support do they have from rehab professionals to make sure that they know how to use it right? And has anybody looked at the home environment before this equipment is provided to them? Sometimes we can realize problems that are existing in the home that you don't get when you just talk to a patient in a hospital environment. So we have a lot of steps that you need to go through, obviously, in order to issue an assistive device. So what is the activity it's going to be used for? How am I going to instruct the person? Am I going to instruct them in the hospital setting and get them familiar? Most of the time when I work with somebody in a hospital setting, even post-stroke, I get to work with them for maybe 2 weeks if I'm lucky. There's a lot going on in 2 weeks. If I'm seeing them for an hour a day and there's a lot of different needs that are being addressed, do I really have the time to give them a device that maybe will help them, but I don't have the time to do the training? What would be the success if I did that? So I need to be able to reinforce its use. And, of course, I have to justify it to the insurance companies, to Medicare, to Medicaid. Sometimes for some of these small devices, patients can buy them. Sometimes they can't. Sometimes they don't have the money. There are a lot of resources out there available for people who need to. I gave Dr. Jeffy a list of different resources of different agencies. It's real common to give people shower bars to fit into their shower, to hold on to for balance when they're in the hospital, if they're an older patient who's had a neurological injury. Do you know that about 50% of those don't get installed in the home? That doesn't mean that the people didn't need them or couldn't utilize them. That just means that we didn't look at how it was going to be used and make sure that that person was set up with somebody who could actually install it or knew that they had the money to install it or set them up with an outside agency. So repetition is key. You got to demonstrate it. You got to practice it. You got to give them written stuff. You got to give them video. We got to do follow-up. We've got to do support groups. And if you can, refresher training. Who pays? Do you think that every single piece of medical equipment that I prescribe for a patient actually gets paid for by the insurance company? If any of you have got private insurance, you might want to read what your insurance policy covers and doesn't cover. You'd be very surprised. Typically, you're lucky that if your wheelchair is falling apart after 5 years, that you get it replaced. A lot of times, if you want to do better than a depot chair that's clunky and heavy and difficult to move in and out of cars, you have to pay for it yourself. VA is really nice, though, to its patients. I got to say this. They're very, very generous about giving adaptive equipment, and they don't put the same kind of restrictions on that you see if I was working at Stanford Hospital and prescribing for another patient. I can get people pretty much what they need, whereas Medicare will say, I'll give you a bath bench, but I won't give you a raised toilet seat. Or you can have the raised toilet seat, but you can't have the bath bench. VA doesn't make that kind of say. As they said, if you can prove that this person needs it, we can get it for you. So, what's a problem with people and non-use of assistive devices? Too many devices, way too many devices. It's really easy. You see a table here full of assistive devices. But can one device do the job of 10? Better use if it can. Okay. Do you have to change your habits in order to make your ADLs easier? That's very difficult for people to do, to be able to say, well, now I'm going to get out. Instead of, you know, cutting my own food, I'm going to have somebody else cut my food for me, or I'm going to have to carry around this special rocker knife because I only have the use of one hand, and I'm going to be able to do that. But that means that you're carrying around an extra tool with you. So how easy is that to change a habit like that? Do you think about that when you go to a restaurant? You're not going to carry a knife with you necessarily. Maybe you have one at home. So here's a little cartoon that says, why make it simple when you can make it difficult? And so you have to be careful when you're designing technology for people that you don't make it too difficult. If you make it difficult, two things will happen. One, the people who end up having to do the prescription and the ordering aren't going to order it for their patients. And two, the patients aren't going to use it if they do.
Are you talking about difficult to use or difficult to design or both?
Well, the design one is your problem. It could be a difficult design, but as long as it's not difficult to use, that's a key issue. So you'll see Alan will come up here with a device that was given to him, and you'll see about difficulty in use. And then finally, we've got a problem in that 50% who need assistive equipment in the last 30 months in this one study that they did, 30% were unable to get the needed equipment. And a lot of people needed rehabilitation services, and only 50% of those received the services they need. Another great example of this is I have a friend whose brother just had his face fractured when he was hit by a car, and he was in a coma for a couple weeks, came out of the coma, released from the hospital 30 days after the accident. He's getting physical therapy for the walking, but he isn't getting occupational or speech therapy for his memory loss. That's a great example of people not getting what's needed. He obviously has a need. He can't remember what's going on, what you said to him 10 minutes ago. There's easy devices and easy ways to train him to do that, but he's obviously not getting it. The doctor isn't making the prescription available to him. And you have to be a savvy consumer out there in the healthcare world to be able to do what needs to get done sometimes. So that's the ends of the slides, but I did bring a lot of devices. And again, I want to talk just a sec about fit. Obviously, this fits me. This is a cock-up splint, might be used for carpal tunnel. It's not going to fit you. So can we go out there? There's things, you've seen people wear splints for carpal tunnel, right? And they don't fit real well. So what ends up happening is people end up not using them a lot, or they use them incorrectly. and then they end up with additional problems. So you can design something, and unless it's fitted properly to the person that you're intending its use for, it's not going to be a good fit all around for making them and involving them in the rehab process. So I wanted to invite up Lil and Alan. Alan, did you want to bring your notes with you? Huh? Yeah, that's what, you know, I had a I have two universal tools that I believe everybody should have, whether they have a disability or don't have a disability. One of them is a grabber, long-handled reacher, which I had in the car, which didn't make it when I was running over here like a crazy person. The other one is this, Dysom. And I brought Dysom, and I don't know if you guys got to play with this. This is kind of fun, really high friction coefficient. So pretend you want to scoop ice cream, but you only got one hand. What do you think is going to happen if you're scooping the ice cream like this? Things are going to move all over the place. If you think about how you do the activity, you hold onto the ice cream container one hand, and you scoop with the other hand. So putting something like this underneath it makes all the difference in the world. And it's really great for opening jars. That's what I keep in my kitchen. It's a little schmutzy from that. So, all right. So this is, again, Lil and Alan. And they both had a stroke, but very different kinds of stroke. In Lil's case, she can speak fine. And her hand is affected. You want to show them your affected hand a little bit? It tends to be very tight. She can move it a little bit, but it's not really can be used functionally. Alan has a stroke on his other half of his brain that affects speech centers. He also has a hand affected. If you notice in Lil's case, she has a left hand affected, and Alan's case, a right hand affected. Most people who have aphasia have a left-sided stroke, and their right side is affected, and their speech centers are affected. Okay? Yes, yes. So I have a couple questions for you, more than a couple. So I'll start with you, Lil. So what products or technologies do you use out in the community to make yourself more independent?
My cane.
Your cane? Yes, she walks. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What else? But you can't get everywhere. That's an endurance issue, right, for you? So that's why you see her in a wheelchair right now. Okay. So, what else? Do you have a ramp in your house?
No, I don't have a ramp, but I have a railing on my steps going up my porch.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a bench, which I have to live without.
Right. Anything else? Or you keep it pretty simple?
I've got grab bars in my shower.
Uh-huh. And I gave everybody Dysom in my class. Everybody, that's my present to everybody. Y'all have the Dysom, right? Okay, how about you, Alan? You use a lot of different things. I can show some of them.
So, quotes list for $200.
Yes, you found a mat table on Craigslist for $200 and you bought it.
Oh, yes, yes.
And what do you do with the mat table? Is that where you do your exercises?
Yeah.
So Alan's a person who's taken a lot into his own hands. He researches a lot out on the internet. He's very involved in the rehab process and finding out what's available out there and buying it if necessary.
Four-legged
table.
So 2 by 4 by 9.
And that's for?
The leg.
Leg. Oh, is that for stretching out your leg?
Yes. And,
Okay.
Yeah.
You want to show them that your sabo that you have here?
Yes, but
not yet.
two by.
And this is
three
a.
By one.
By 15, three. That was another table, slant.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Slant table.
Table.
So he's had a lot made for him. He's unusual, again, as I said, in that he's done that. This Lil is more of your typical user, and I wanted to kind of have you kind of compare and contrast a little bit about what they're doing. And I'm dying to tell about this because this weighs like a ton and a half. And this goes in a car. Anybody want to guess what it's for? Yes. And the reason that Alan has it is because he goes places and he wants to be able to not have to worry about having an adaptive car with hand controls or any of the rest of that, which really don't work well if you only have one hand to drive with. So this works really well. So this is portable. I mean, but heavy. I mean, anybody want to feel how heavy this one is? It's heavy. It's really heavy. But it's a great example of that kind of middle range device. He likes, it's got grippers on the bottom to grip the carpeting on it so it doesn't slide. It's very heavy so it doesn't slide. Again, we could have made this really high tech for him. We could have come up with all kinds of devices for him to be able to use the car. But this is great because it's usable in any car that he goes into. Left foot.
No. What hand is the first one I keep the right hand?
Now, Lil, you don't drive, and the reason you don't drive is?
Because after you have to stroke, they take your license away from you.
And you have to pass tests, and it's probably more difficult than the driving test that you had to take when you got your driver's license. Once they know that you've had a stroke, especially any time you lose consciousness, the doctor's required by law to notify the DMV, and your license can be taken away. So we got 85,000 devices. I know you have it, but I think we should get going. I want to hit this. Now this is interesting.
Yes.
So this is a device called the Sabo Stretch. Now the goal for this was that, and you can see this on both Lil and on Alan, is that their hand tends to curl and be tight. Now Lil, how come your hand's so loose right now? She'll laugh and it'll get tight. Watch, and see it tightens down. But typically a lot of people who've had a stroke could do is they can hold something in their hand, they just can't let it go. And so that's not real functional. So he got this device to help him to make sure that he could have his hand stretched out. He had some nice movement going in his shoulder and he had some nice movement going in his elbow. And we put on this device and lo and behold, we lost tone throughout his entire arm. So now he can't move his shoulder. Now he can't move his elbow. And so we kind of are starting back at square one with a lot of these things and trying to rebuild up his muscles so that he can at least use his arm kind of, and as a functional, what we call a functional assist. So you can put your arm up on a table, hold a piece of paper, and just keep it there. Okay, so this is an idea of a technology, and you can see how long it's going to take him to put on a technology that looks pretty simple. It's got Velcro, no hinges, no nothing, it was ordered by a therapist and there was a program of training on it and lo and behold, it doesn't work. Did you pay for that yourself?
This is
Yeah, it's for the hand.
No, he's, no, no.
And, but not for the foot?
No, no,
no. What? What about your AFO?
No, no.
Oh, your fabric? Oh, it's messing up your fabric. The hook on the hook on your Velcro is messing up your pants. Yes. So it's another thing, you know. So, but as I said, he's trying all kinds of things. What's his goal? What's his goal, guys? His goal is to be as independent as possible and to make things as easy for himself as possible. So, is that your little book light or holder opener? Yes, for holding open books. So that, he's a person who likes gadgets. Little engineering. Well, what do you think about all these gadgets? And why not? Why wouldn't you? Right. She's talking about a device with a function. Both of these people have problems with, if they weren't wearing a device on their ankle would drop. So what happens is when you walk, you normally lift up your ankle to clear, okay, and then plant it. So if you've got a foot drop, what happens is you come through on this and you do this and you would trip. Okay, so you don't want to be tripping. So both of them have what's called an AFO, an ankle-foot orthosis, this plastic bit. Again, this one is a form-fitted one. This is not something you just want to get off the shelf and give to anybody. It needs to be fitted correctly so people don't get sores or any of the other problems. Pretty simple device. Works really well. They've got a new device out there that has electrical stimulation of the muscle that would lift up the foot. Problem with that is if you don't have enough swing, because there's an accelerator in there that needs to be triggered, then it doesn't work. So it's expensive. $100. And it gets, sometimes insurances will pay for it. I know one of people at Reach got it through the VA.
Yeah.
Two people, yeah. Yeah, besides you. I was going to say besides you. But it's expensive. It doesn't work for everybody. So it's a good goal. It's a good way of doing that, but it's not perfect again. So, you know, a bit of engineering could be used to make that device better.
Are you talking about the walk aid?
Yes.
For the people that it does work in terms of their swing, does it? Do they think it's uncomfortable because of the simulation, or do they not mind
it? Most of the don't mind it. But as I said, it's a pretty small percentage of the population that can actually, you know, utilize this device. So we talked a little bit about, you know, custom fit here, and I think, you know, Alan's a good example where there's been a lot of custom modifications done. We've had a history of doing that at the VA, where it's been a lovely collaboration between engineering, occupational and physical therapy, and the patient themselves, because they come in. Dean would be a good example. Again, he comes in with his wheelchair, and it doesn't quite fit him right. So maybe a little bolt here, a little bolt there, or, you know, I make an adjustment to the heel strap that he's got that holds his foot onto the wheelchair. That's this heel strap. And it makes it better for him. Same thing with his abdominal binder. I've taken stays out of his abdominal binder and made him smaller. Really simple adaptations, but not something that everybody either thinks of or realizes it needs to be done. So, but as I said, we've been lucky at the VA that has, you know, prior to now, been something that we've been able to do for our patients there. So, ask you, Lil and Alan, a question. So what product do you wish you could have? What would be a good thing to have that you don't have now? That would make it do what, Lil?
But that thing doesn't work for me.
No. Right. a better can opener?
Yes.
Right.
So,
have you tried the one-handed electrical can openers?
No.
And see, there you go.
Three quarters of an inch.
Oh, so you think if you made this part longer? What do you call this part? I don't know. If he made this part longer, he's saying, well, he would be able to use it easier because he could flip it with his thumb. So an interesting, easy adaptation. You know, it's interesting to think about how you could do that. And you've heard from Alan that he's paid for a lot of these devices themselves. Now, Lil, how about you with your wheelchair and stuff? Now, you kind of have a fancy wheelchair. And? And the reason that a scooter would be not as good for Lil to utilize is that in order to take it on a car, you would need a special lift to have it on the car. You crazy driver, you. All right. And how about when you got the equipment in the hospital, both of you? How did you find that process? Did you get what you needed, did you think, when you got out of the hospital for making that transition from the hospital to the home?
That's when I get the wheelchair.
Yeah, and that's about it. Did you get a reacher at the time?
Yeah.
No? Interesting. And that's a problem with people who rent. But not everybody's got the kind of support. Lil's got absolutely wonderful support from all of her children. And, of course, Candy, too. And Alan, yes, no on getting what you needed? Yeah. Yeah, you said forget the wheelchair, huh? Did you get all your rocker knives and all those kinds of things, or did you purchase those yourself?
VA.
VA, okay.
Yes,
VA is very good about that, yeah. And that's, again, a little bit of difference between an outside healthcare system and dealing with that versus dealing with the VA healthcare system. So, again, just keep in mind who your users are and what their needs are, where they're coming from in their lives. And, kind of my final word to you is when you're in a design process, it's really good to involve the users and not just one or two, if you can get a pretty good idea, because these are fairly different users, and I wanted to point that out to you. And to involve a therapist or whoever would be the person who would make the prescription for that device, if that device ever became a usable product out there, because we're the people who have to, again, do the training of the people. So we're going to kind of have a good idea what's going to work, what's not going to work. It's not that we don't make mistakes, but you have to have buy-in on that. If you make a device that for most occupational therapists who have it, they would shy away from almost most computers. There's a few occupational therapists who specialize, got special stuff from ResNA and assistive technology and feel comfortable with computerized ECUs and things like that. They're the rare beast. And I'd say that in terms of timing, too, for most physical therapists and occupational therapists, the same kind of thing. So you need to have somebody, you know, who, it's not to say you can't do that. And if that's the thing that's really going to make the difference between somebody being functional and not functional, we'll learn the system. But you got to get our buy-in on it. You really got to get our buy-in on it. And let's see. Anything else you guys want to add? Did you want to tell your story a little about your recent travels and your travails with being in a room for disability?
In the hotel rooms, when you get a handicapped room, so many have just a king size bed, which is ridiculous.
And she
Yeah,
she travels with a helper. She travels quite a bit, and so that's a problem. And she actually went into one, you said, and that didn't have a... And so she came up with a great solution. Anybody can... Let's see what you engineers come up with. She didn't have a bath bench. It's a bench. It's a chair. It sits inside the bathtub or inside the shower. So she's out there. She needs one. What did she do? Let's see if they can figure this out well. Close, very close. Anybody else?
Okay.
Is that the only good use for it? Thank you. Yeah, you guys went to like a hardware store or something? Garden chair. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, and that's a great example of being really adaptable with it. But why they didn't have a bath bench in their... No idea. You're surprised. Alan travels quite a bit. Its own headache. So, questions?
Is it reasonable to call the front desk and tell them, look, it's a reasonable accommodation. You're really required to do this. Is that...
We tried. They just didn't have anything.
Right. You need it? Need it?
It
is, and they could have, and if, you know, Lil and Candy wanted to follow up on that, they certainly could have made a complaint, and ADA does cover that kind of reasonable accommodation. Exactly.
Reasonable accommodation. We were talking a little while ago about bars and landlords. Aren't they required to help you along there as well, at least not obstruct you when you're trying to...
Not with the destruction of property. And they can consider that putting grab bars that will make holes in a plastic, you know, shower enclosure or something, a destruction of property where they could be having water leaks. And so it's kind of a gray area, and you really have to work very closely with the people and try to make that happen. There's other devices that are out there that actually will clamp onto the side of the bathtub and can be used that way. But as I said, it's almost standard practice, you know, somebody's got an orthopedic injury, let's send them home with the grab bar. You know, somebody's got a neurological injury, let's send them home with the grab bar. And as I said, if they don't get installed, what good are they? And it's a lot of different reasons they don't get installed. Guys? Eric?
Mother, who was never very tall, had a hip replacement, had to be in a wheelchair, and could, you know, reach down and pick stuff off the floor, or you have to get things off the shelf. So she went through five or six different features in order to find one that was reasonably good. None of them were old, bay, you know.
Well, you got a lever arm that long. Your wrist is not going to do real well. Yeah. They have ones actually that are designed for people with spinal cord injury that are based more, they have ones that, you have to do this to open rather than to close and have kind of a double handle thing. But even so, it's a problem.
We found one that was really great for putting Christmas lights up under the eaves. So that's what we use every year.
I use, because of my short stature, I use my reacher all the time. And you know, if you got a bad back and you can't reach down or something like that, reachers are great to have. As you said, you can put up Christmas lights with them. Some of them have little magnets on the end. So some of you came up here and looked around. Anybody, did you guys figure out what this was?
Shoelace.
Okay. You seen them, right? So they're in there, and all you have to do is twist instead of tie, one-handed. Okay. Problem. What if you can't reach down?
Velcro put on shoes.
Right. And there's elastic shoelaces that you can have, regular elastic shoelaces. And there's just, if you guys want to come up, they're here, there's splints. These are for different devices for putting on socks. If you can't reach down, like you've had a total hip replacement. Easy things like bath mitts. So again, it's part of our kind of arsenal as an occupational therapist, a lot of really simple devices, because those are the ones that tend to be used the most or can be afforded by our patients. Several. It would be going to conferences, the AOTA conferences, ResNIC conferences. You'll see all the new products that are out there. You always get your rep coming by. They can't give us free lunches anymore, which is kind of too bad. But so they'll teach us about our new wheelchair, our new seating system, lots of different things. So, or we just do research. Some of us just like to go on the Internet. North Coast Medical? Yeah. So there's one in the Bay Area. I actually did a design project with them, and unfortunately, it was a great design for, it was a, how do I want to put this nicely? It was called a hygiene aid. It's for people who can't reach behind them or to wipe. But the cost, it was a very simple device, but the cost of actually manufacturing the device, even though it had very few parts to it, and it was a cute little design. It was something I showed our master model maker. I had this idea, and I kludged it together with paper clips and this and that, and he was able to knock something out, like, within an hour. And they really, really liked it, but they couldn't manufacture it. Yep. So you can have great ideas out there, and you can run into that kind of snafu, too.
Why couldn't you manufacture?
The cost of doing the mold and stuff like that. As I said, you've got a price at which people don't want to buy the device. So you have to stay within a certain price range when you're looking at devices like this that people are willing to accept. It's a little different when you go to wheelchairs, but even so. And the same thing with prosthesis, you know, what Medicare and Medicaid will provide in terms of, like, artificial legs versus, you know, if I want to be an elite athlete and I want to go out there and I want to run on the track, I'm going to have to buy my own, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars prosthetic. For the prosthetics?
Yes.
It depends on the prosthetic.
No.
For this?
Yes.
What are they willing to spend? Most people are willing to spend about in the $20-$25 range. They don't like it, you know, they prefer it, most people would prefer it in the $10-$15 range. You know, and as I said, and it's almost impossible to do some of the manufacturers if you've got any moving parts in it, and that's where the expense came. So there was one little joint, so it had to be molded two separate molds, or it couldn't be one separate mold. But, you know, it's interesting. I made an adaptation. You actually had seen it. You've worn it to a splint for people whose arms were hanging kind of loose and it was pulling on the tendon. And it was just, you know, one strap changed, you know, kind of changes the whole biomechanics of it. And so there's little engineering things, you know, of devices out there that actually do need to get fixed. And the question is, can you afford to have the fix done on the product? This was easy because it was a strap and it was just a matter of sewing. Yeah. Anything else you guys want to know?
I think we should thank Debbie and Alan and Will for coming today and telling us some very interesting things about the human side of assistive technology. And anybody wants to come up and check out the things. Thank you.
you, you guys.